Welcome to the Razors Inc. podcast with your host, Jonathan Farini. Today's episode of the Razors Inc. is going to be a little different because at the heart of every movie and TV show is the story and the story writer. And given Jonathan's first love of writing, today we go to one of Jonathan's short stories and bring it to life. So pour yourself a drink, pull up a chair, and hear Jonathan's take on movies, television, and today, setting the scene. Here's your host, Jonathan Farini.
It's been a long day, and I retire to the front porch of my home with a panoramic view of the turquoise Pacific Ocean. It's late evening, and I sip a cognac, which helps to steady my trembling hand. The Parkinson's disease prevents me from performing surgery, but I'm happy to serve as a general practitioner for the island's inhabitants. The cognac in sight of my daughter, Ariana, and granddaughter, Katie, playing in the moonlit surf of French Polynesia warm my heart. A refreshing trade wind brushes the palm trees and abruptly opens the tattered journal, which has recorded my life. The notebook pages I filled over the many years are a reminder of the long, twisting, and unpredictable path leading me to this paradise. I'm thankful for my journey. I had a front row seat from our pre-war penthouse apartment with a view of Central Park on the Upper East Side of New York as the innocence of the early 60s morphed into the cynical and violent late 60s. My parents were successful psychiatrists treating the neurotics, alcoholics, bulimics, and egomaniacs from their plush office on Fifth Avenue. My parents were ambitious and didn't expect to have a baby in their 30s, although they were trained to treat the emotional disorders of their patients. My parents were unable to provide for the emotional needs of their son. I never wanted for material possessions, but craved their love and attention, which wasn't available. I'd run down to the lobby and into the loving embrace of Ace Rodriguez, who was our doorman. Ace would assure me, "Don't worry, little man, all things shall pass. Just keep playing it cool, my man." My playground was Central Park, which was conveniently located across the street from our building. I found surrogate parents amongst the homeless who camped within Central Park in the spring and summer. The eldest and wisest of the group was a Korean War vet nicknamed Redbird, because his long beard was red in color and resembled a bird's tail feathers. He was missing a front tooth and wore his hair in dreadlocks. His face depicted a hard life, and I suspected he may have done time and was a former junkie. Redbird's prized possession was a tenor saxophone, which he played for spare change in the park. Redbird played the sax like it was an extension of his soul and was likely a professional musician in the past. Redbird challenged me to think hard about what I wanted out of life and told me to forgive my parents' inattention. "They're on their own trip, Abby. You have your own road to travel." Redbird also told me, "You can't change your parents, but you're riding your own journey, Abby. Question everything you hear and see. Examine it from the inside out, and then you'll understand what it means to you." Chloe was the most beautiful and complex woman I ever knew. She was one of my parents' patients and introduced me to the demands of psychiatry my parents practiced. She was razor thin, a brunette with her hair tightly pulled into a bun, wearing knee-high patent leather boots, a miniskirt, brightly colored silk paisley blouse, and white satin elbow-length gloves. She sat, opened a copy of Vogue, lit a cigarette, and waited to be called for her appointment. An hour later, Chloe exited the office agitated and approached the elevator. She opened a black alligator skin Dior handbag and was frantically searching for something. The elevator door opened and we both entered. I offered to hold her handbag as she reached inside to find her pack of Cool brand cigarettes and lighter, saying, "Thank you, young man. I need a cigarette. My nerves are shot. I'm Abby. The doctors are my parents. I'm Chloe, Abby. And I shook her hand, covered by a satin elbow-length glove. Chloe invited me to join her for tea at the Pierre Hotel, and I accepted. Chloe and I bonded over tea. She was 29 and a successful real estate agent who worked her way up from a typing pool into the lucrative world of high-priced Upper East Side real estate sales. Chloe had a tough upbringing and was the only daughter to an alcoholic mother. They lived on welfare, and Chloe alluded to sexual advances by her uncle, which her mother ignored. She was a lonely heart drifting from one vacuous relationship to another, desperately seeking love. We each longed for the love of attentive parents. Chloe provided me the nurturing I craved for my parents. We spent the 4th of July together on a rooftop balcony with a 360-degree view of the city. I knew Chloe had her pick of lavish parties to attend and was flattered she would spend the evening alone with me. It also spoke to a detachment Chloe had with her many clients and lovers. I suspected her demons demanded solitude. Chloe ran to me and gave me a big hug, exclaiming, "Happy 4th of July, Abby. Welcome." We drank wine and patiently waited for the sky to grow dark and the fireworks to light up the city. I felt a comfortable buzz from the wine, but as the first of the fireworks began to light up the sky, Chloe dropped acid, which combined with the wine, provided Chloe the ability to numb her demons. Chloe loved the Rolling Stones and cranked up the volume on her stereo, and the lyrics resounded. Chloe lit a handful of sparklers for each of us and shouted, "Let's dance, Abby." Chloe removed her clothing, revealing sexy lace panties and bra. We danced and ran about the balcony, waving our sparklers like children. Around and around we ran, becoming dizzy. I felt free and careless for the first time in my life. Chloe stopped dancing and leaned dangerously over the balcony, saying, "Look at the fireflies," referring to the car lights and pedestrians 40 floors below. Chloe rolled over on her back, and only my grip kept her from tumbling off the balcony to join the fireflies. She demanded, "Let me fly, Abby." I pulled her safely back onto the balcony. Chloe grew limp and fainted. "Chloe, are you okay? Should I call somebody?" Chloe muttered, "You're a lovely and lucky boy, Abby. You have boundless opportunities ahead of you. Don't waste your time with me. I'm broken." Chloe fell into a deep sleep. Chloe always wore elbow-length satin gloves, and tonight one of them had unraveled to her wrist, revealing razor scars running the length of her forearm. I covered her with a nearby blanket and left as the last of the fireworks trailed off into the night sky. The last time I saw Chloe was on her birthday. We met in the Oak Bar at the Plaza Hotel. She was sitting in her favorite secluded booth and already on her second martini. Angelo, the bartender, sent his waiter over with a pitcher of martinis and an extra glass for me. "Hello, Abby, my darling. I apologize if I'm a drag tonight, sweetheart. I'm 30 years old, alone, and it's all meaningless." Chloe reached for my chin with her satin glove, traced the contours of my jaw, and inserted her fingertip into my mouth, saying, "You're a darling, sweet Abby, but someday you'll understand." Angelo approached with an elegant petite chocolate cake adorned with a sparkler and wished Chloe, "Happy birthday, madame." I gave Chloe a hug and said, "Make a wish." Chloe closed her eyes briefly and opened them to a thin, rectangular, gold-wrapped gift with a silver bow I placed in front of her. Chloe's mood instantly improved as she gently opened the gift, revealing the Stones album between the buttons. Chloe jumped from her seat, ran to Angelo, and asked him to play this song, pointing to one of the tracks on the album. Angelo was pleased to accommodate his favorite client at the expense of the Mantovani music, which was the staple of the bar. The Stones lyrics filled the bar, startling the patrons and attracting them to the beautiful and stylish woman dancing alone to the lyrics while hugging the album jacket. Her mascara was running down her face from the tears flowing from her eyes. Chloe removed the clip from her hair bun and her long brunette hair fell to her shoulders. Chloe was lost in her own universe. Goodbye, Ruby Tuesday. Who could hang a name on you when you change with every new day? Still, I'm gonna miss you. The song ended and the bar erupted in applause. Chloe ran to the ladies' room, clutching the album cover. I never saw her again, neither did my mother, Dr. Singer, her psychiatrist.
She just can't be chained to a life where nothing's gained and nothing's lost at such a cost.
So what happened to Abby in the ensuing years? Because there is more. If you find yourself curious, go to Jonathan's Substack and read Bác Sĩ, which means doctor in Vietnamese. You'll find Bác Sĩ and a whole lot more in the Jonathan B. Farini story collection at jonathanfarini.com. There you'll find everything from drama to romance, something for every reader, as well as the full archive of past editions of the Razor's Ink podcast. That's jonathanfarini.com or drop an email to razorsincpodcast@gmail.com.
Nothing's gained and nothing's lost at such a cost.